Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show. Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a spectacular Tuesday. Well, we thought we were going to have Tuesday night football. Turns out, you know, it's Wednesday night football now. Maybe, we think, possibly, probably, almost definitely. No, we have no idea. That's really where we are right now in the NFL. More on that to come. We have an absolutely spectacular show for you. We cannot wait for you to hear some of the stuff that we've been working on. I want to start with last night because last night was, well, it probably felt like Groundhog Day for many of you Eagle fans. And it's interesting because what happens in those standalone games, is that it's not red zone. It's not highlights. It's not people screaming at TV that Carson Wentz needs to go, that Jalen Hurts needs to play, that you get a chance to see for yourself the entire thing develop. And what was a, look, at one point in time, it was a 14-9 game, and the Eagles very much had opportunity after opportunity to win that game, and then they just lost control. And the big reason is Carson Wentz appears, by my estimation, among other things, to have lost his confidence. You know, the things we don't talk enough about on radio, on TV, is the loss of confidence. I think but the other part we haven't necessarily circled in on is the real story of last night was not about Carson Wentz. It's about the Eagles not being able to handle success. It is a tale as old as time. Getting there is hard. Staying there, more difficult. Remember Lane Johnson? Remember that? Wasn't it cool when he said, we're going to have fun? So much more fun here. You having fun now? And if we really are honest, yes, that Eagles Super Bowl roster was loaded. It was a good football team. They were the best team in football, and their quarterback got hurt, and they still found a way to win a Super Bowl. If we're also honest, that year was a year in which was probably the weakest NFC that you'll face. Remember, the Eagles got off to an 11-1 start. 11-1. It was the first year of Sean McVay as head coach. It was a season where Zeke was suspended, so the Cowboys didn't make the playoffs. It was the final year of Ben McAdoo with the New York Giants. Remember, that was the year that they decided, hey, let's sit Eli and start Geno for a week. So of the teams in the NFC or in the NFC East, you had two of them, the Cowboys and the Giants, that were abject disasters by the end of the year. In the NFC, Aaron Rodgers got hurt. That's what happened. Why weren't the Packers competitive that year? Aaron Rodgers got hurt. Case Keenum was the backup quarterback with the Minnesota Vikings. Remember, that was the year that Sam Bradford was the starter for one game. Played great. Then his knee would just start to disintegrate before our eyes, and they had to replace him with Case Keenum. He was a backup. And with that backup, the Saints had the Vikings beat in Minnesota the week before. If you look out west, right, Arizona was a mess. That was before they signed Sam Bradford the following season. The Rams had just at the, I mean, it's very early into the Sean McVay era. Right? And if you also look back, this was the Niners before they had acquired Jimmy Garoppolo at midseason. So when you look at the competitiveness of the NFC that year, their own division had two complete and utter dumpster fires. Then you look out west, which is now probably the best division in football. And three of those teams were non-competitive. And the Seahawks, who were the best team, that was Richard Sherman tore his Achilles tendon. Earl Thomas was a nightmare. That's when they lost to the Cowboys, and he came in and told the Cowboys to come sign me. It was Cam Chancellor's final year. It was the Legion of Boom got old and dysfunctional. You have to go back and look and remember and say the best team in the NFC North was the Packers, only Aaron Rodgers got hurt. So then it was the Vikings who won the NFC North with a backup quarterback. The NFC South had the Falcons, who nearly beat the Eagles in the first round of the playoffs, and the Saints, who had the Vikings dead to rights beaten, only lost the Minnesota Miracle. All right, so now we have North, South, West. Told you in the East what happened. It was a joke of an NFC. And even with that, the first home game, when they lost to the Falcons, the Falcons had the ball at the 5, fourth and goal from the 2-yard line, a minute 5 to go, and they ran a fade to Julio Jones, who had the ball and then couldn't hold on. It was a good defensive play. So if we start and we're honest, yes, that Eagles team was really good and probably the best team in the NFC, maybe the best team in football that year. But before even getting to the fact that Malcolm Butler, the best cover corner for the Patriots, basically didn't play in the Super Bowl, before we even get to that, we have to realize that the NFC that they went through was super, super soft. That's why they look so good, even with their own backup quarterback. Since they won a Super Bowl, what have they done? Well, they basically re-signed everybody. That was Howie Roseman brought back all of his guys, and it was an us against the world, and Chip Kelly didn't know what he was talking about. He didn't value our guys. So he brought them back. They won a Super Bowl, and he's like, yeah, let's run that back. How does that work? And in the last 2 years, he drafted wide receivers. You go back to 2019, the second round, he drafted J.J. Arcega-Whiteside from, that's the cat from Stanford. He could have had Terry McLaurin or could have had D.K. Metcalf. Last year, he drafted Jalen Reagor. He could have had, Justin Jefferson, who's going to set, every record for rookie wide receivers, or Brandon Ayuk, or Chase Claypool, also all available. Howie Roseman and his staff, whoever is responsible for the draft, and ultimately it falls on it, they blew it with their top picks in order to rebuild their talent at wide receiver, and they've had massive injuries as well. They haven't fixed their offensive line. The coaching staff, the depth of the coaching staff was depleted. I remember there are questions about Doug Peterson to begin with, but their coaching staff was so deep, everybody picks apart whoever, like vultures, the champions. Right? Right now, it looks like Frank Reich was the brains of the operation. He's able to make it work with an over-the-hill Philip Rivers and was decent previously with a backup quarterback. Frank Reich looks like he was the guy who knew what he was doing on offense. They just didn't know how to deal with success. It's very hard to make it in any job. In any professional sports, it's hard for the team to... How long did it take Philadelphia to finally win a Super Bowl? And in that division, as much of a mess as it's been the past couple years, you got the Giants, they've won a couple. You got the Skins, they've won. Or Washington football team now, they'd won 300 Joe Gibbs. Cowboys, once upon a time, won 3 in, 4 years? Or they win 3 in a row. And the Cowboys are America's team. They've struggled. It's hard. I'm not saying it's not hard, but you're the best team in football. Now you're 3-7-1. Are injuries a factor? Sure. But most of it is you didn't know how to deal with success. From re-upping with older players, and when you get older players, they're a little bit entitled and a lot bit broken down. That's one of the reasons for injuries. They missed on their early draft picks over both the past 2 years, and they haven't coached up Carson Wentz right, and he's lost his confidence, one, because he's not playing well and everybody's telling him he's not playing well, two, because he's not being coached well, and three, because none of the dudes around him to make him feel better even when he doesn't make a play. Doesn't have to win every game. Right. If you remember back to, there's a famous line from Cool Hand Luke, what we have here is a failure to communicate, right? What we have here is a failure to handle success. That's the real story of what happened last night. This is the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Chris Sims will join us 20 after the hour. We'll get to his thoughts on last night. I mean, could I go on and on about Seattle? Yeah, they're fine. I mean, they're going to win 12 games. Do I think they're a Super Bowl team? Hard to tell. Hard to tell. There is something about the 2020 athlete, though, and I think DK Metcalf and the kind of controversy, non-controversy with him and Jim Schwartz speaks to it. Speaks to it. Jim Schwartz was telling the truth to DK Metcalf, but like most in 2020, he didn't know how to handle the truth. We'll get to that upcoming next.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. You know, I thought this was a generational thing, and I don't think so. I think most people just don't know how to take a compliment. I think that's really kind of what it is. Do you know how to take compliments? It can be uncomfortable at times to take a compliment. But I do think that one of the things that's just fascinating about the young person in 2020 is this idea of finding negative in every story. And I used to send out a tweet daily, which is, all right, who's offended us and who do we want to fire, right? It's like an everyday thing in our cancel culture. And DK Metcalf is, you know, he's the classic 2020 athlete. Because we could sit here and say, man, everybody missed on DK Metcalf. Okay. He got hurt. He broke his neck, I believe, right? And he was like this close to never walking or playing football again. So in addition to the fact that people were scared that he was so muscular, he was like robotic, like the old David Boston. David Boston was a juicer, but he was just this freak physical specimen that couldn't move because he was so muscular. There was the injury concern, which people are like, all right, he barely played in college. And so he went in the second round. It's not like he went undrafted. You know, he went in the second round. He's been great, better than anyone could have thought. And I think like the epitome of a 2020 athlete, he's got the nose rings going. He's got the tats going. I mean, the guy's, if I had a body like that, I would never put my shirt on. Literally, never. Dead of winter, I would have my shirt off. That would be my signature, which kind of feels like he does. And he's been as productive as his body is clean in terms of the crispness of his, you know, muscularity, whatever. He's been great. You know, the questions about him getting in and out of routes and if he was robotic mostly have been answered. And, of course, he had the chase down tackle against the Arizona Cardinals, which was an amazing effort play. That's a team play, which I love. But he did this thing, which I feel like the younger generation does, which is find a way to be offended even during a compliment. It's one thing to struggle with a compliment. It's another thing to turn the compliment into something offensive. One of the defensive coaches came up to me. This is DK Metcalf. And kind of made me mad. He was like, I was in Detroit with Megatron. And you're not there yet. Later confirming that it was Jim Schwartz, defensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles, who was the head coach of the Detroit Lions and Megatron. In my mind, I'm not trying to be Megatron. I'm trying to be me. So I had a little chip on my shoulder the whole game. Jim Schwartz didn't speak to the media after the game, but Eagles PR said the coach meant his words as a compliment. Yeah. So, again, here's what has to happen for DK Metcalf to be made happy. You have to walk up to him, if you're going to talk to him, and say, hey, I coached Megatron, who's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer as a wide receiver, and you're better. Which, by the way, he's not. Not yet. Which, by the way, would be taking a shot at Megatron, who's his guy. I coached him. You know, I know how good he is. And I'm sure he said, like, look, you got a chance to be Megatron. I'm not there yet. Okay. Like, do we remember how good Calvin Johnson was? He had the 122 catch, nearly 2,000 yard receiving season. I mean, look, dude, in the seasons, he had 2 years that he missed basically because of injuries. Outside of that, you know, he caught 70 or more balls, like 10 years. He had 80, 90 catches. He had 7 1,000-yard receiving seasons. 83 touchdown catches, and of course, he had that one taken away. What Dez caught it was, before that was Calvin Johnson. Megatron caught it. Like, look, this guy was a freak of nature. Played through injury, made catches, made plays, simply amazing. And this is one of those to even be considered in that. It's a lot like now if we talk about, well, you know, he's not Larry Bird. Dirk Nowitzki's not Larry Bird, but was an MVP and a great player and first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, well, what do you mean he's not Larry Bird? Well, Larry Bird, the second he got to a 29-win team, they won 60 games. He was the MVP of the league. They won, I think, 3 titles when he was there. It was him and Magic's league. Like, they were the best. He's a better rebounder and better passer than Dirk and equally as good a scorer in an era in which guys didn't shoot threes, but he could shoot threes. How do I know? He won 3-point shooting contests without taking off his warm-up jacket. Like, it's a, to put you in the category or even in the discussion of Calvin Johnson 2 years into your career, when you haven't done anything in the postseason, not that Calvin did, when you haven't set any sort of records as of yet, and just saying, like, hey, man, I was with Calvin Johnson. Like, you're on your way to being there. That's not a slight. That's a compliment. That's incredible. For an opposing coach to say that to a player is remarkable. You have to take it as such. But this generation of people, not just athletes, people, find whatever morsel can be offensive, that's what's offensive. And we've done it with both the past two presidents from different sides. We do it in the media. We do it, you know, when we cover reality shows and we read books and we try and find the one negative. What was the negative thing? Oh, you said, I'm not there yet. Oh, I'm trying to be me. Like, look, dude, if I put you in the category of Calvin Johnson, that's a good thing. Right. I didn't say, yeah, I thought you're going to be like David Boston, who had like one Pro Bowl year and then got found out to be a juicer and then flamed out of the league. No, that's not who it is. Anybody wants to call me Calvin Johnson or close to Calvin Johnson, I will accept.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's get to Chris Sims, who joins us. Of course, you see him football night in America. A little different this Sunday because Dungy was out at the game, calling the game, and so he and Rodney Harrison were duking it out. How bad did you want to be in that booth breaking down how good Aaron Rodgers is?
Oh, well, I'm always game for being anywhere Aaron Rodgers is. I mean, it's, you know, my favorite quarterback ever. I think it's the greatest quarterback of all time. You know, it's a team sport. It's not, you know, rings. I understand that discussion and all that. But, man, just seeing Aaron Rodgers in person play a few times and things, I've just never seen anybody, you know, move the way he does. And the TV really does not do the football justice. You know, I would even say that with Patrick Mahomes. If you saw it in person, you'd go, whoa. That ball is humming a lot faster than it looks like on TV, and you can't get over how fast it spins. The RPMs on the ball for a 20-yard throw, he can spin it harder than anybody, and that's why he's got such great control and can throw it through the elements in Green Bay all these years.
All right, the juxtaposition of that with what the Bears are throwing out there. Right? Like, there's a bunch of different levels to it. One, there's the fact that you're watching Aaron Rodgers on one side and you're watching Trubisky on the other. Two, it's a standalone game. And as you know, and the ratings will point out, like, those games, everybody watches and they watch everything. It's not like Red Zone where you watch the good and then the bad, the highlights, and that's it. So, right. I mean, it was really alarming. And then the third part was, the first drive was great, but they had 2 drops in the end zone, broken up passes by the defense, and Trubisky was playing well. And then he gets the ball back, and they're down, I think, 13-6 at the time, 13-3 at the time, and he just, you could see him lose his confidence, and then the team loses confidence completely. Like, the defense, which has been good, I felt like that was the opposite of what was needed to turn around the Bears' season.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, first off, I think the biggest thing, their defense, we haven't seen them play like that all year long. I'm sure that's what Matt Nagy's talking about yesterday in his press conference, talking about not acceptable. I can't believe we played like that. You know, it's been a Super Bowl caliber type defense all year long. And they're really better than what their stats say. You know, I mean, they would be statistically better if they weren't on the field every fourth play of every other drive because their offense never stays on the field. But I think that was disappointing. And with no Akeem Hicks, you know, you see, okay, Rodgers is on his game. Whoa, all right, maybe they can adjust. But with no Akeem Hicks, they had to worry about the run game more than they normally would too. And now you got to worry about Rodgers and an effective run game. I don't care what defense you are, that's going to be tough to stop. So that's one issue. You're right about the Trubisky-Rodgers thing. I mean, hey, that's glaring. And the Bears' offense is pitiful. I don't know any other way to say it. You know, we can talk about Trubisky. Yeah, they messed up on the draft. We know he's not Mahomes and Watson and all those things. But, you know, it's not just Trubisky. I mean, one thing we know this year, it's the offense. We've seen Nick Foles, the offense looks crappy. We've seen Mitchell Trubisky, the offense looks crappy. We could bring Brett Favre back. I think that offense will still look crappy. It doesn't matter. There's nothing to it. There's no run game identity. The pass game is very simple. And it's going to be interesting to see what the Bears do going down the stretch here, because Nagy's an interesting combo, right, Doug? I mean, it's 12-4. It's 8-8 last year. It's 5-6 right now. I like a lot of things he does as a head coach. I just don't like the offensive play caller. And I'll just be interested to see where they go with this as the year plays out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think it's fascinating because their schedule does lighten up here at the end. The defense did seem to bottom out. And I guess we'll just kind of wait and see. But I would guess that Trubisky's done there. I don't know about Nagy. It'll depend on how his team responds to his rant from yesterday. That's the voice of Chris Sims. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I think you're exactly right. There's got to be a new quarterback, you know, in Chicago this year, whoever it is. I mean, whether the Jets get Trevor Lawrence and you got to get, you know, Sam Darnold, or if the 49ers move on from Jimmy Garoppolo, if Atlanta moved on from a Matt Ryan, something like that. But you're right, they got to do that. And then if they do keep Nagy, the thing I would just say is, they got to make sure, okay, we'll keep you as the head coach, but you got to bring in a new offensive coordinator. Not somebody you know that runs the same offense, like something totally new that makes sense for our team. And I think that'll be a conversation that happens after the year.
My assessment of Wentz last night, there was some good, there was some bad. I do think he's lost his confidence. I think that's why he's gunning balls in there.
Yep.
And I, you know, you and I have discussed this on air, off air, when, you know, confidence is like the underwritten part of what makes you guys able to do what you do, right? You're not worried about the blitz in the defense or getting hit, getting ear hold. You're just picking apart a defense and you believe in all your prep and you believe in your talent. I feel like he's lost that. But I feel like the real story to Philadelphia, and you tell me if I'm wrong, it's an organizational disaster in what they've done since the Super Bowl. They haven't drafted well in the early rounds. They re-signed too many players that were past their prime, and that's what's led to them getting hurt. And when they've lost a bunch of their assistant coaches, some of whom are on that Bears staff, okay, when they've lost, they haven't replaced them. And I think Doug Peterson has gotten a little bit exposed as not being able to handle more of the duties with a different staff. Tell me I'm wrong.
I'm not going to tell you you're very wrong there. You know, it's a subject I talked about in length this morning with Mike Florio on Pro Football Talk, where, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head there. It's more than just Carson Wentz. Yeah, I mean, you're right there. Hey, he's not pass protected well. There's no weapon to worry about on offense. You know, he hears all the chatter. And, yeah, he's flustered. He's trying to make too much happen at times. You know, it goes back to the old, like, hey, he's seeing ghosts at times, not seeing things clearly. You know, the game's in fast forward right now. It's not easy for him because it's not easy for anything on the Eagles' offense. You know, Doug Peterson, yeah, he lost John DeFilippo. He lost Frank Reich, guys that were other idea makers in that offense in that Super Bowl run. You know, Doug Peterson's offense, do I sit here and go, it's Kyle Shanahan, Sean Payton? No. But I sit here and go, oh, it's plenty good enough. But with the offensive line injuries, you get into that conversation and all the, you know, movement there. And then I think the other thing that's really flown under the radar are the two things you said. Not drafting well and re-signing old players and maybe hanging onto the shelf life of that Super Bowl team just a little too long. You know, hey, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside in the second round last year, you know, the kid they drafted in the first round this year at a TCU, I'm blanking on his name right now. Or
Jalen Reagor.
Right. I mean, all those receivers. And so there's two guys right there where, man, there was a lot of good receivers left on the board. You blew it right there. You know, DeSean Jackson, Alshon Jeffrey, Those aren't Doug Peterson problems. That goes back to Howie Roseman, older guy taking a chance. Yeah, they got an injury history. They're injured. They're not playing. You gave them money. That's the risk you take with those type of guys. So I think you're right. It's all across the board. They need to kind of re-infuse their team with some young talent this offseason. And really, I think last year almost, Doug, was almost a detriment. The fact that they figured out and Carson Wentz played so phenomenal down the stretch and carried them to get them into the playoffs, I think it gave them a little bit of a false sense of, hey, if we're healthy next year, we'll be fine, and we're not that bad. We don't have to, you know, rip the Band-Aid off quite yet, and obviously that was wrong.
Chris Sims joining us from NBC Sports, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. What do you think the delays in the game due to the Pittsburgh Steelers?
Oh, well, I think, you know, everything I know, it is truly just about stopping the spread, making sure it didn't go throughout the organization, and did they feel like they had a good enough hold on it finally, you know, with all their technology and everything, to sit there and go, okay, we think we've got to figure it out to this group of guys. We've stopped the spread. We got to contain all that. I think that's really all it came down to. And that's that.
Chris Sims joining us. Yeah, but does holding off these games, does it hurt?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, listen, I feel bad for Pittsburgh. I look at it that way. You know, I mean, it's brutal. I don't know what else to say. It really is. But they're not going to forfeit games or do any of that. Pittsburgh, who's done nothing wrong, they're going to get screwed over. And then what I also challenge, too, is, wait, Pittsburgh's going to play Wednesday. Baltimore's going to play Wednesday. Man, the Ravens get to play on Tuesday, and Pittsburgh, who did nothing wrong, is going to play on Monday. They're going to get even the short straw in the next week of games, too, for doing nothing wrong. That's, to me, where it's a little bit BS. And I hope we can just get all these games in and make it through the year with the way everything looks right now.
Chris Sims joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Is Jared Goff going to hold the Rams back from getting to a Super Bowl?
Well, if they don't support him the right way, because he's just, you know, as you know, and I think anybody who's watching close enough to go, hey, he's a fine football player, but he's not the franchise end-all, be-all type quarterback where we were just, you know, talking about, like, he can't carry the team. As you see, when the run game and things don't work, their drop-back pass game, his ability to extend plays and make big throws, it's just not that special. And you know, I just wonder, when are we going to come in to stop paying some of these quarterbacks that I look at to go, they're average starting quarterbacks. When are we going to stop paying them? Like, they're like the whole team. Like, they're, no, we can't survive without them. You know, we've just seen too many teams with young quarterbacks on rookie contracts be successful, go to the playoffs, go to Super Bowls, do all of those things. And yeah, Goff is one of those guys that needs a support system. He is a system quarterback. He is not a Mahomes, a Rodgers, a Josh Allen, a Deshaun Watson, or in the class of those type of players.
Chris Sims joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. What happened to the Raiders? They won three in a row. Then they played the Chiefs. Yeah. It was a good game, competitive game against Chiefs. Then they lay a complete egg against Atlanta. One of those games that most people didn't pay attention to, except for going like, what the hell happened? What happened?
Yeah, I just watched the film a little while ago. I mean, the defense, first off, I think this is the first thing. Raheem Morris, he was there in Tampa with me and Gruden for all those years, the head coach of Atlanta. He was the assistant secondary coach to Mike Tomlin and everything. Yeah. He's got great understanding of the offense. You know, the Raiders' offensive line, yeah, not at full strength, and they really struggled with blocking the speed of the front seven of the Atlanta Falcons. Let alone, yes, they made mistakes and were asleep at the wheel. It's one of those where I this is kind of the saying I go, they let the Chiefs beat them twice. You know, they lost to the Chiefs in the sure. Sunday night game. Yeah. They went home and went, man, we're pretty good. We're almost as good as the best team in football. And, you know, they got punched in the mouth by a team that's hungry and trying to, you know, save their season to a degree and maybe save the job for Raheem Morris to where he can be the head coach.
Chris, the Doug Gottlieb Show rolls on here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, you look at the Saints, and now they've won two, but the game plan was super, super conservative.
Yeah.
Two games in, do you have any sense for if Taysom Hill is, in fact, more of the guy than people thought he was the guy before he took over?
Yeah, well, the first game, I mean, I know we talked about it last week. I liked what we saw in that first game against the Atlanta Falcons. You know, like we said, it wasn't perfect, but there was a lot where it went, I like that. I like the way the offense looked. I haven't really got to study this game yet. You know, watching it on Sunday and trying to keep an eye on it and all those things too. You know, I don't think it's going to be a game where we're going to get much out of it, because it looked like Sean Payton, once he realized Denver's quarterbacks weren't playing, you know, they were probably going to play it close to the vest to begin with, and then they saw that, and he went, wait, the only way I can lose here is if my offense turns the ball over and their defense scores touchdowns. So that made him even reel it in even more. And I just don't know if there's enough there. So I can't quite give you an honest answer about exactly what I saw him in the past game, but I think your original thought was right there. There's just not much. You know, they played the game to win. Sean Payton wasn't worried about the stats and how it looked and everything like that. You know, maybe we'll get to see a little bit more this week.
Okay, where are you on Arians and Brady? It felt like Brady used Romo as like a surrogate, right? And he was, yeah. Romo was pointing out the flaws in the offense. Bruce Arians came out and said, "Hey, look, you know, Brady lays out all the plays that he likes. Those are the only ones we call." Where are you on the kind of back and forth between the two?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's still the same old. There still seems to be a little bit of a clash of styles and how they want to play. You know, Tom Brady, obviously good. I mean, we know that, and you can win a Super Bowl. Tom Brady, top 10 quarterback, is no longer a discussion. So everyone has to stop that. He's not capable of carrying the team. Hey, they had 4 third-and-5s or less to start the football game. He struggles when teams blitz him. He doesn't want to get hit, and he can't move. So go back and watch it. His 2 interceptions, the 4 third-and-shorts he had to start the game were all blitz, all him panicking, not being able to move or make a throw. And that, to me, was the biggest issue of the football game. And that's why, Doug, you've heard me for weeks and weeks in a row, where this is where I think there's a clash of, you know, style here, where – Brady, he needs to be protected, but I don't know if he wants to play that style of football. You know, I know he wanted Antonio Brown there, which tells me he wants to be in the shotgun spread offense and throw all the plays that we've talked about. Welker, Amendola, Julian Edelman. Except Mike Evans is not the same animal as those guys. Neither is Chris Godwin. Their offense is not built to run that type of old New England offense where Brady would pick you apart. Nor do Arians and Leftwich have their scheme isn't as diverse as Josh McDaniels and Belichick up there in New England in that department. So, they were built to play, hey, we're going to run a little, and then we're going to take some shots down the field. Now, you can't ask all these receivers who were built to play one way to change their game.
Right.
That's where it's a little bit of an issue, Doug, to me.
It's a lot bit of an issue. And then the back and forth in the public is, I'm sure, a big issue for Brady, who he's okay being called out, but just publicly, well, I don't understand what the win is.
I don't understand that either. I'm with you. You're not accomplishing anything there, except for now you're hearing people talk crap about Bruce Arians and how they don't like him.
Yeah, you know, and it needs to be his last year. He's retired. It's crazy. You open yourself up to criticism, right, which you don't need to. Chris, hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for joining us. Look forward to hearing you, I guess, midweek now, right? We're going to hear you all the time now with NBC having all these different games at different hours.
No pregame for tomorrow, though, so you won't hear me tomorrow. No pregame. I think they're doing a little special on Ryan Shazier, and they're going to go right to the game. So
got it.
Just have to wait till Sunday to see my face.
All right, and the hair. It was a good cut this week. Very tight.
Thanks,
very
man. Tight. Kept very it tight. Fresh for the holidays.
All right. Appreciate it, Chris. Chris Sims joining us. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. A good friend and a guy who takes a little rubbing. I actually like the hair. I'm not actually messing with him. DK Metcalf doesn't want to be compared to Megatron, but is he the best wide receiver in the NFL right now? I will tell you next.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Doug Gottlieb Show rolls on here on Fox Sports Radio. Every day at this time, we like to round up some of the stories of the day. We give them to Dan Beyer, and he plays the game.
Game time!
This is game time.
It's game time.
On the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Dan Beyer, what's the game today?
Doug, the game today is...
Rank 'em.
All right, Doug, rank your top 3 wide receivers in the NFL today.
Top three wide receivers in the NFL today. That is a great, great question. I mean, I have to have Tyreek Hill on that. I mean, it wasn't just the performance that he had. It's that he's a guy who every team has to game plan for, right? That's a big factor of it.
Sure.
DK Metcalf actually leads the league. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, I've always argued that we don't give Tyreek Hill enough credit for his skills as a wide receiver because we just think he's fast guy.
Yeah.
And I think that's unfair.
I would, here's what I would rank him. I would say, it's hard to not say Devontae Adams one, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to do Tyreek Hill three, DeAndre Hopkins two, and Devontae Adams one.
Okay, Doug, rank your top three teams.
Wait, would you have DK Metcalf in that group?
I would say right now I would have Adams, Hill, and Metcalf. I'd have Adams at one. I'd probably put DK at, gosh, it'd be tough to put him at two. But that would be my top three. I have Adams as number one. I think that he is the best.
I do too.
Rank your top three teams in the NFC. I think we kind of know who they are, but
yeah,
it's the
Packers,
order.
The Saints,
and Seattle.
In Seattle, right? Those are the three. Although it's like the Rams dominate Seattle, but the Rams can't beat San Francisco. I'm going to say Packers one, Saints two, Seahawks three. Now, it should be pointed out that Carlos Dunlap's having an MRI on his foot. That's never a good thing. He only played 30-some-odd snaps last night.
Yeah, they are hoping for good news on that one. Doug, rank how you think the top four of the college football playoff rankings will look tonight. Last week, it was Bama, Notre Dame, Clemson, and Ohio State in the top four.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question becomes, what do you do with Ohio State, right?
Yep.
I think A&M stays where they were at
five.
At five. And then, you know,
Florida,
you got Florida at six, Cincy at seven, BYU stays there at eight. I don't think any of that changes. Indiana probably drops because they don't have Penn.
Yeah. And Northwestern was eight last week. So
I'm looking at the wrong one. Yeah, they lost. So, I mean, but other than that, I kind of think that's how they end up looking, right? I mean, that's
the same as a week ago.
Yeah.
All right, Doug, rank the three best holidays or holiday weekends to watch football. And this means college. This means pro, because you've got Labor Day weekend, which is usually the college football opening. We just came off of Thanksgiving, New Year's Day.
Well, New Year's Day was the best. I still think it's the best, but it's not as good as it used to be. New Year's Day's best, Thanksgiving 2, Labor Day 3.
All right, Doug, finally, your favorite Christmas cookie or snack? That you like, maybe a Hanukkah snack.
The gelt. No, I'm not gonna go with the gelt. I'm gonna go with the cookies and the milk that are left for Santa. I haven't tried them, but they look and taste, I would guess, delicious.
And that's Rankum.
That's game, huh?
Game time.
This is game time on the Doug Gottlieb Show.
Do you guys like eggnog? I like eggnog. I just do. With or without booze, I like eggnog. Just want to point that one out to you. Things I like. You guys, we also got to figure out holiday gifts for everybody. I got to do some more quizzing of people to figure out what they want the most, because I've done the champagne thing before. We got to figure this out. Tom Brady is realizing something about his time in Tampa. I'll tell you what that is. I'm coming next to the Doug Gottlieb Show.